I think he's way back behind, maybe Calendar and maybe some of the, maybe some of the specialists from the area, like Bush. And there's a few reference works here. I wanted to mention before I got off etymology too much. And one was an alternative to the analytical lexicon for the New Testament is this M parsing guide. It goes book by book through the New Testament. And it's parsing all the verbs in each verse, and they're listed in the dictionary form off to the left. Good for Greek students, too. If you're reading along, reading like you've got everything all the way through. It's a serious study. You want to cross-check it with the analytical test. You know, very nice. But for the non-Greek student, if you just look up the verse, that way you don't have to go through the whole thing and analytical lexicon to get the verse.
Capital letters.
probably one of the best professions for him is in Bowling Green. other thing I want to mention is the underground intertestamental linear, Old Testament interlinear, is throughout in the But it's under the name of John Kohlenberger III, which is the guy that did it. But that would be really good to get together with definitely compared to Jay Green. And to get it compared to as it comes out one by one. Yeah, that's all it's great. It's overdue now. But the game seems like Christian distance. The guarantee is Christian distance. No, I imagine it'll be competitive with Green. There's just 39 or something like that. I imagine it's going to be okay. That vocabulary that I just want to add a couple more words before I go on. First is the customary usage of a word at a given time. And the second would be the particular usage of a word at a given time. So it's drawing a fine line into Latin terminology that sometimes is used. Referring to the customary usage of the word and then that day, like a particular usage of a word in a particular context. Like there's a number of terms in the New Testament that are really defined in the New Testament in a new sense that they didn't have outside of the New Testament, a particular author inspired to use a different after the briefing review, there's three ways to do a work study. I mentioned electrical, important, and a personal inductive study. And now I'm on the personal inductive study section, involving two steps, the historical and contextual. And under historical, under number one, I mentioned etymology. I got through that section. And the next would be number two, would be Greek literature outside of the New Testament. And this would be chronological. So what I'm going to do, basically what I'm trying to do is expose you to as many reference words in the next hour or 2 hours as I can. I'm trying to show where they fit in and where the value is. So in doing a word study, if you did a historical, we're talking an inductive word study, that you want to search out every possible meaning of the word, do a history of the word at various times, as far as you can trace it, to after the period where it was used in Scripture, and then zero in on how it would be used in Scripture. This would be if you had the time to do a full inductive study, rather than deductive study, it started with how it was used in Scripture and worked out. Here in inductive, you're working in, and has the advantage of you haven't programmed yourself to what it means to be this thing with a broad range of meaning. Basic scientific methods apply to work study. And in the New Testament now, in this whole section, we're going to be talking about the New Testament. The Old Testament is a little different. This whole section is going to be from the historical study, not the historical study, including etymology. I don't know if I mentioned that when I started, but this is on the New Testament. I'll give you a separate from the Old Testament. So we're still on two steps of historical and contextual, different ways for each language. So under the historical, number one is etymology, and number two is Greek literature outside of the New Testament. First would be classical Greek. I'm going to be going through A to E under two here, if that's going to help. Classical Greek would run from about 900 BC to 333 BC. And the main tool for that would be the Greek lexicon that Dale Scott has. It's primarily the classical Greek. It goes up through the 6th century AD, but its main value is the source for early Greek for generations studying the subject. It refers to classics that are written in Greek that are available in translation in low classical library, L-O-E-B. Every major city has it. They have a big library, and you can have a copy of that. You're doing a real detailed study on the word, and you did want to see what the reference was referring to. You see, to draw your own conclusions rather than the conclusions that they were drawing. I had reason to deal with some of my research projects. But that's probably the one. Yeah, it's probably, yeah. Pardon? Yeah. second period would be Septuagint, about 250 B.C. And the best the concordance for that is Hatch and Redpath, which we don't have, H-A-T-C-H and Redpath. It's almost like a molten gin with Septuagint. It has a lot of uses. The one we have is Baxter, that little one.
By Rahlfs,
R-A-H-L-F-S.
And it is for the Greek student, but it gives you all the different Septuagint readings where they differ within themselves. But that's a great apparatus. R-A-H-L-F-S. If anyone tries to get a hold of me, I'm living in the UK. I look up the phone number, I can't remember. Okay, the Koine Greek period would be the next section. This would run from 330 BC to about 330 AD. Koine. This would answer the question as to how the words being studied was used in common Greek of the period, as evidenced by the papyri and archaeological experience. Because that's primarily what our sources are. This very description plus the papyri. And there's two. One main work and another one
but both of them are vocabulary and Greek New Testament. Did you?
Yep.
This is in Greek. It's like a Greek. This is one of the Greek words. And it gives you any discussion of the word where they found the word discussed in the entire language. The other one is Titan. And he gets a scripture index from that, and he puts it on the particular verse in the Testament. You have very human both that he has all written out in his university. And the discussion gives us Greek and gives pictures of the papyri of the discussion of the language. And a lot of times he has to know some of the discussion. At that time, all of the grammar and everything changed that particular service was one of the main papyri. These other two, there's several other minor words here. All of these are forms here. In addition, there are other sheets here and there. Sometimes the Hebrew word that's translated by the Greek can help define the Greek
And there's a real good lexicon for this. In fact, a lot of times you don't even need to go to step two of these. You can get it right here and have Smith and condition to it. But this gives you condition to step two is just what step two is translate. How to use that word in getting it, the Hebrew word in getting it translated. You've got everything right in one shot. It doesn't give you detailed discussion. It refers to other references. Another would be Darby's translation. A lot of times gives you that fusion. And the companion Bible, that's the big Bollinger's grab that. Semitic writers who wrote in Greek, and mainly we're talking about Josephus and Philo. So they're basically Jews who wrote in Greek, not using the theology. These are usually given in Liddell and Scott everywhere. Well, the collection of writings that were done, there's spurious writings that they're using. The Book of Enoch, the Temple, Jewish writings, apocryphal writings. P-S-E-U-D-E P-I-G-R-A-P-H. You're on my writing I can't imagine ever using them. See, the only reason I brought them up is because you'll see them referred to sometimes. What is that? Yeah, that's your lip. That's a strange vocabulary words, but it's but Dallas Scott, some of the others probably will they refer to using Josephus and Philo by name and then have some abbreviation for pseudo pig or something like that. You know, you wonder what in the world. Okay, and the last one would be the patristic Greek lexicon, which goes from about 100 to 300 A.D. It's the early church fathers. And there's a lexicon just for that, LAMP, L-A-M-P-E-S. Study, you want to trace the whole history of the word, see how it changed its meaning. The next step would be you'd want to check the lexicons, other lexicons, not just for the word studies, different ones, to see if there's an agreement The definition changed over a period of time. It's modified, it's the same. The Golden Grounds would be the best to check all of them again. Which is the most recent dictionary of epistemology. Some of the others, most of you probably are familiar with hills, stairs, vines, and Art Gingrich. Vincent, some word studies, Vincent particularly, and we, Robertson. And commentaries on the Greek text, particularly Posner's, and Alfred's, and Meyer's, anyway, ERS. Okay, then if you had all this background, then you go to the New Testament usage. Then we're doing an inductive method, not a deductive. So we're working our way in instead of out. Okay, so the New Testament usage, and go ahead. Yeah, we're still in the historical, this is the third, number three. Would be the concordance for the non-Greek student with the Englishman, but the best. Okay, and this would give you the usage of the New Testament. You have to compare it over different writers, different types of literature. And the changes it may, you know, may change. If it changes, you have to know what type of literature it changed. And the last category, number four, would be to compare the early versions. For us, it's pretty hard to do, except the New Testament according to Eastern text, which gives you the Peshitta, they treat the word the same way. It's a real early Syriac. Taking all the above categories, information, into account, okay, we go through, we do a historical study, then we take, do a new, we take, first of all, we take the etymology, okay, see what the etymology is, then we do a historical study, a chronological study, charting through these different periods, then the New Testament concordance study, and then comparing the both to write out a definition of the term at the time it was used in the New Testament, based on all the information. What was that period of history? How was the common usage of that term? That would be the locus of funding. After this is done, or only after this is fairly inductive, then we check the particular author of the verse and the immediate context, and then the same book, and the other books of the same period by the same author, and the other books in general by the same author, and so forth, and the New Testament. So we're working our way out, but this is after we've already got the background. Okay, we're checking the particular author, and then his usage, out of his way, out of the whole New Testament, just his book in the New Testament, like he's called, we're looking at a particular author, a particular passage. Closer to that passage would be the immediate context, and then the same book. and not just, don't just jump to another book. In Paul's case, the books were written at the same time, same period. His books span quite a period of time. And then other books find the general case. And then compare his usage with the locus loquendi. And notice any differences. Resolve any differences to the best of your ability. And write out his particular usage if it's different. If it's the same, notice the same. If it's different, notice, write it out how it's different. This would be useful for finding. We've got two definitions at this point. We've got the current general usage, and we've got a particular usage here, and it could both be the same. Okay. As I mentioned, it's an inductive method because it begins with gathering various information before making generalizations. In the deductive, we begin to the opposite. It works opposite. If you do a contextual study, it works in circles of context. To grab that handout that I just gave you, the advantage I mentioned of the deductive is because it's less likely to interject biases before all the evidence. In terms of closeness, church fathers in there next. And then the next would be the Jewish Greek writers, principally Josephus and Philo. And then the papyri, which would be non-Jewish and non-Christian writers. So you're getting further out for what the differences in language and style and race and creed. And then finally the Greek classical. The classical Greek gave way to the Byzantine period. And Liddell Scott handled just both. He used the BYZ. So all of this is in this, with regard, just kind of a verbal picture with regard to. We wouldn't use all of these. And the more information you had on a word, in the first few circles, you wouldn't bother using the rest of it. What if you got a word like the half hour of silence, tribulation, which is the only occurrence of that word anywhere during the Greek literature? So you can go through the whole first one and find it anymore if that's the only occurrence. I did that one. But some words only can occur once in the New Testament, but they may occur a lot, say, by the, in the Septuagint or in the early church writers or something, and you could get a definition of how I'm going to it and take it back into it, rather than just trying to find it. That's all the lexicon. You're in a sense double checking. Under number three, the Septuagint and Old Testament usage, I put Abbot Smith because that's Old Testament. And the Church Fathers, we've got the patristic lexicon, which I didn't put in there, but the 19th period as well, which I didn't mention before, the index of the 19th period. Yeah, the anti-19th period. And Paul's Milligan's vocabulary in the Greek Testament. Normally we probably skip number five, unless we didn't have any information yet. It's a little harder to pin them down, but Liddell and Scott do do it. And it's just easier to go to Paul's Milligan. Okay, circles 2 to 7. We used to establish both. Okay, so we need to establish a historical conclusion before proceeding to the contextual study. Obviously, this whole method is predicated on time. Determination, patience, diligence, but sometimes it's necessary. Sometimes it's worth the effort. Most of these, incidentally, are good sources besides the grammar and preposition of studies for the Greeks. And studying preposition for the references. Okay, now, on the Old Testament, historical study. We'll take the historical study all the way through and Old Testament, we'll get through it. Then we'll go into the Old Testament, both the Old and the New Testament, and that will finish up. Well, this is the historical section for the Old Testament. I just finished the historical section for the New Testament. but after we do the, after I do the historical proposal, then I'll do the contextual proposal. There's two steps, the historical and the contextual. But it's good to separate. You could probably jump in and just do a contextual study 90% of the time you'd be right. 90% of the time you'd be right and just pick up the first lesson. That doesn't give you an ability to really do a detailed work study. The next, that's probably the most important ability, I think, outside of grammatical studies, outside of being able to deal with variants in word studies. If you can't do that, you're really hindered from doing, good exegesis, because then you're at the mercy of commentators. But if you can do what you can do word studies, even if you don't know the language, under etymology, then the best is Justinius. Of course, the analytical Hebrew lexicon. And the theological dictionary of the Old Testament, which is going to grab find that's that green tree body and where it's in the bottom shelf. It only goes about a third of the way through the alphabet so far. But that's about the Old Testament counterpart to Kittles, maybe. So as far as it goes, it's a real good study for the etymology we're talking about. Also, Brown, Driver, and Briggs, which is... Big Kohler von Bern, it's a big green one with a supplement in the other library. This is a later edition. All they did is omit the German in it. The other one's a German and English, and this is just an English. And it's that thing. So it's two thirds of the way through the alphabet in the third edition, the other is the second edition. And so it's better. The other one would be a concordant vocabulary list, which get that blue. On the bottom shelf, that blue bound, now the other one. That gives roots by families. It doesn't give you much, but it's the basis for their translation in the Old Testament. They break things down into roots of families. That's the key to the analytical method. And then the index of the Hebrew grammars, Justinius Couch, it's just Justinius' grammar. He has the scripture index in the back, as does Ewald, E-W-A-L-D. Those two grammars have indexes in the back that, if you're looking at a particular scripture, they may have the word in their discussion. And then also our old friend, the Old Testament Translation Problems by Wolfson. Two others. Go real quick. The Vine Expository Dictionary of the Old Testament words, the counterpart to the New Testament, but it isn't as elaborate. It's going to go to some words. And Wilson's Old Testament Word Study. They we've got both of those there. The other, the only other category would be commentators by Palin Village and so forth that they discussed. Okay, that finishes up etymology. The time I put off for a week is up. I'm going to have one more option. If you want to improve your grade, I'll give you a time to do that. The reason I put it off is I want to finish this, and I'm going to jump in the middle of that. I'm going to take some time doing this, and let's run with it. Keep running away from it. Next Wednesday, I'm going to do that. I'm trying to do it.